accession number 220-81, wheel 4.
Mr. Gray, rail 4. Right, Mr. Gray, we're still talking about your move to being a dispatch rider. When they taught you to ride the bikes, was there any kind of special driving skills, any kind of tactical things that they learned you?
Well, Danny just showed us, you know, how to go on it. And he was always a good chap, like, you know. And I seemed to catch on pretty quick, you know. And then as it went on, I liked it all right, and that was it.
Now, could you just describe a typical scheme as a dispatch rider? What would be your role?
Well, running from company to company. If the lines got broke or something, I'd do it purposely. Well, the next best thing was, you know, just ride on it. I used to go around all the companies with different messages from whoever was in charge at the battalion HQ, like, you know. And I'd say sometimes you used to have these umpires and that, didn't you? They would jump on the back of the bike and, you know, go.
Now, during these schemes, did the umpires? Can you remember any incidents where the umpires would say that you were, you know, dead, so called? You know, did that happen?
Not to me, actually, but that's what they did do, like, you know, yeah.
And in terms of, you know, messages between, you know, battalion HQ and company, would you ever have to kind of liaise with other battalions, other units? Would it always be within the battalion?
Oh no, like from battalion HQ, we would go to perhaps whoever was next to us. So it was, you know, the Foresters or the Leicesters, that thing. They were always in touch, and the only way it was with a motorbike, you know. Although at brigade headquarters, they got the Royal Signals there, and, you know, we should take messages to them and they would relay them to whoever it was.
What about passengers? Did you ever? You know, to talk about having an umpire on the back of the bike.
Nearly all the officers jumped on the back of the bike if they were going in the recce, and if you was at battalion HQ, you know, they would jump on the back of your bike. Even Colonel Preston, if he couldn't get his, he had a Jeep, you know, and he always had the same driver on the Jeep, but if he thought he couldn't get down with the Jeep, he would jump on the back of the bike. And Warrell done the same when he was in Italy, like, you know. And Captain Miney, who gives that character thing, you know, he was on the back of the bike very often.
Would the signals platoon officer Girling at this point, would he ride a bike as well?
No, you'd get on the back.
You wouldn't ride it himself?
No, you get on the back. I'm not saying perhaps he couldn't ride, but it was always, you know, I don't suppose there was a bike available everywhere, but he used to get on the back of somebody, you know, if he was available.
And in these very early days, 41, 42, would you ever have it like a sidecar?
No, just
the bike on the tail. Right. Do any other incidents stand out on these schemes with when you've mentioned the umpires?
Not really. That's what we did, just took messages to each company sort of thing from retiring it sure if they couldn't get like the wireless going or the line was broke or something, you know.
Would these messages be in code or would they be
Well, some perhaps were from the brigade, you know, to somebody else. They might be in code, you know. They would be in a sealed envelope, you know. We wouldn't know what they were like.
What about, would they ever kind of teach you, like, a verbal message that wouldn't be written down, or would it always be written down?
No, not really. But we very often had mouth-to-mouth messages, if, like, in Italy or that sort of thing, and you send you out somewhere, but when you got there, perhaps they'd moved, and you didn't know where they'd moved to, like, you know, it was there. But we always, you know, that's what we done, like. And there was times, like, the Jeep would set a mine off, where a motorbike sometimes wouldn't, you know, it depends what sort of mine was on.
Now, you mentioned the route marches and so on, now that you were a dispatch rider, did that get you out of the route marches altogether?
It done most of them, you know, but we did do some while I was in, you know, yeah. Oh, yeah, we still done some.
So they made sure that you...
Oh, they kept you going, yeah. Oh, you didn't miss out, really, you know. You took your share of everything, really, you know.
Now, you had these bikes. I mean, did the signal platoon have any other transport apart from the bikes? I mean, you've talked about the signal truck. Was there anything else?
No, not so. I only had the truck. Sometimes they might like HQ, they had a jeep there, perhaps for around the HQ officers, you know, if it was urgent sort of thing, but they didn't have one separate. There was only the colonel had one of his own and sort of thing, you know.
Did you have much contact with the kind of Royal Artillery, the so-called forward observation officers? This is in England before you went abroad.
Not really in this country, not really. But although we did go around the barriers with messages, you know, envelopes sort of thing, different at the time.
And I think you mentioned off the tape, and we'll get onto this one when we talk about your time in the front line, of having a radio man on the back of the bike. Did you ever practice this in England before you went abroad?
No.
You didn't?
No, not really.
So you didn't have any contact with the number 18 set, really?
Well, we did one at HQ because, like, we was near HQ and the storeman, not the NF chap, you know, he was a nice fella. And he dabbled about and showed you how to go and talk to him, you know, what was happening. He was pretty up to date, heavy. He married a Dunfermline girl, he did. But he was older than we are, 3 or 4 years older.
Now, June 41, 42, the so-called battle school was being established. Did you have any contact with that? Mm. Where they'd send off men to be trained at the battle school?
Yeah, there was a lot sent away. I can remember vaguely, but, you know, I can't really. But I knew it was on the go, sort of thing, you know, but I can't recall much of it.
You didn't go on it?
No. Not as I can remember. But I say I went on most things.
Now, as a dispatch rider, what weapons would you have?
Only had that revolver when we was in this gun, and when we was at Sedgy. We never got a Tommy gun until we was going to Italy.
So on these peacetime exercises, it would just be the revolver?
Yeah, I had that 45, yeah.
Now, you moved south, you've talked about Thetford and Yarmouth and so on. Then you moved to the kind of, according to the battalion history, you moved to Folkestone. What do you remember about that?
That was Shorncliffe Barracks was in there.
What was that like?
Well, there was a lot of marching discipline there, you know, because we was on a barracks, like, you know, it was Shorncliffe Barracks. We was there for quite a while. That was when the companies were all along the coast putting the barbed wire up, sort of thing, you know.
Looking at the battalion at this stage, what do you think of the standard of turnout was and the standard of discipline?
They were smart battalion, really, you know. And they were pretty well looked up to, you know. Oh, you talk to anybody, you know. Now, of course, we saw them flashes across when we was out, like, you know, that I'm right in front of, across the top of your shoulder pads, aren't I?
What do you think of those?
Yeah, they were smart, actually, when you was out, you know. Oh, yeah.
And what about the... I mean, you've talked about Lieutenant Girling. Did any other officers make the presence as felt stick in your mind from this period?
Well, so we knew them all and we was all in contact with them at HQ sort of thing, and the battalion HQ, like, we knew most of them. That Kaufman, the intelligence officer, you know, he used to jump on the back sometimes and have a ride out, you know.
What was he like?
They were all, they were treated, well, speak as you find, they treated me all, well, we always got treated pretty well. Yeah. But I say, I just done as I was told, and I never used to argue the tough, well, you couldn't be anything, I was it. Lots of things you didn't like doing, but you had to do it, and that was just like, that was it.
Now, you moved to the South Coast, quite near to occupied France. I think the battalion history talks a bit about air raids and so on. Do you remember?
Yeah, right, in Winchester, yeah.
Can you remember anything about any
quite a lot of raids there, you know. They used to come over pretty often there, and, you know, I say the picture has got, you know, blasted out, like.
What do you remember about that?
And there were some of the lads in there, weren't there? In the picture, it's like, yeah. There was quite a lot of near dues and round Rye and Winchelsea, we got, you know, on the coast like that. And there was one or two dock fights here, you can, you know, watch them sort of thing. But you just took everything as it came, right? You know.
What was the orders regarding enemy aircraft? Were you ordered to shoot back at these things, or was there any kind of stand-in?
Well, no, but you had there was both of guns all around the coast, or some of the artillery, you know, sort of thing, all along the coast, really. I don't think, mind you, some of the companies went with these other units, like with the aircraft business, you know.
Well, they went and cooperated with
them. That's right, yeah.
And then you moved to Rye.
That was Rye and Winchelsea. That's where the bombing done, you know, most of on that bit. Rye. It's not far from Folkestone, it's just right along the coast, you know.
And what were your billets like there?
At Rye, we was all right. We was in an old, top of the hill, big house it was. It was the signals, we was all right anyway, you know. But I think most of them were in buildings in that area, you know. I think Yarmouth was the last time we was under Camas in this country. When we was at Yarmouth, we was in a bell tent, the signals were there, you know. We was in proper, you know, accommodation sort of thing, and you got your grub and everything properly, you know, sort of thing.
Now, according to the battalion history, the companies were quite spread out.
Oh, yeah.
In town,
all over, you know, yeah.
Would you have a daily routine as a dispatcher?
Yeah, we used to do it every day, like, and well, you'd done everything. There was always mail and all that. You delivered that sort of thing as well, so, you know. Yeah.
You mentioned earlier a couple of run-ins with the police.
Oh, yeah, that was
Were there any other kind of incidents, accidents or problems during
this? No, that's something to do with AI, really, and that was a bit funny, that was. But I got away with that from the one at Aldershot, that was the military police who stopped us, you know. Pulled us up anyway.
How did you, obviously you must have rode these things during the night as well.
Oh yeah, also, yeah.
How did you cope with the blackout? Because that was...
Well, you were better off without, like, well, you didn't have lights, you knew where you were going. You know, your eyesight's pretty good then. And if you're in the dark, if you stop in the dark, you can manage it. Just like having windscreen wipers on, if you leave them off, you can still see where you're going. Oh, we've done all sorts of silly things, really. But, you know.
So you could cope with.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
No. Did you have like apparently some cars would have these like.
Yeah, half shielded. Yeah.
Did you have?
Yeah, the bike was half shielded in this country. Like. Mm-hmm. When we were in Aldershot, we'd done a scheme in Aldershot. That was a bit of a show on the motorbikes actually in Aldershot barracks itself. We got involved in some military thing there with the bikes, but it was a bit of a, I don't know, everybody was, you know, cleaned up and geared up and it was all neat and tidy, you know, in the barracks and all that. Of course then after then we went from Camberley like, and went to Liverpool then.
Before we get to that, I think the battalion history is mentions the battalion dance band. Do you know anything about that?
Not a lot, but because I wasn't a dancing man really, but they were regular. They're always about if it was, you know, if we can get together, like, you know. When we was in Captain Harris was a signal officer in Rye, wasn't he? That's right. And he was a Londoner. And he got a good voice. We used to get together, you know, at the singles, and we'd have a bit of a sing-song in the evenings. And old Dickie Craggs, he was a real good singer, but he would say, like, opera singer, you know. And there was Captain Harris, he was a song there. That was in Roy, you know.
Can you remember what songs he would sing?
Yeah, I'll tell you. A Baby Go, like that one, you know. He used to sing that. And his Batman used to sing Any Old Iron, you know. That was Crooks, his Batman was. We used to have a good get-together, yeah, and we used to have a load of wine or something, you know, and that was it.
How did you get on with the local people in the southeast?
We used to get on very well with them, really. In Rye, they were all ever so social. A lot of the chaps got invited out and all sorts of at Rye, because they had the dance band going in Rye. You know, there's quite a lot of the lads used to go there. I remember, like, Bobby Wiles, he was a signaller, and he was teaching some of the lads to dance in the barracks at Rye, you know. Hey, poor lad, he got killed. We had terrific company, actually.
Now, apparently there were quite a lot of Canadians in that area.
Yeah.
Did you have, can you remember anything about doing exercises with the Canadians.
No, but we did do them, but I can't remember. But I know we did mix them, yeah. But I couldn't remember anything like that, really. But we did get mixed up with them. Well, we was up with all of them, really. Yeah.
Were you ever sent out on farm work? Apparently some of the men in the companies were.
That was a laugh. It was at Rye. We used to go apple picking. It was either Rye or Folkestone. We used to go apple dubbing. And this farmer used to give us so much money for the apples, you know. And he used to tell us to treat the apple properly, you know. Well, when they disappeared, we used to shake the trees because you got paid for the, you know, the point. You know, that was around Kent for the old apple dubbing.
what did you think about being drafted onto that kind of work?
It was just, you know, it was all right. Like, you was all together and you all mucked in and had a laugh, didn't you? You know, you enjoyed it, actually, yeah. But see, you got some funny tricks, really.
Now, as we moved into 1942, you'd been a battalion, you know, for over 2 years now. Had you given any thoughts, or, you know, as to where you would be sent to? I mean, what were people thinking about as you went through 1942?
Actually, the Irish chap didn't know where he was going really when we got to Liverpool, not really.
Mm. So until then, you still didn't know?
No.
Now, apparently, during 1942, the battalion was sending drafts of men to other units that were already abroad, to the other DLI battalions, and also to the infantry. Can you remember anything about that? Was anybody that you knew posted away from you?
Where were they doing that? In Aldershot, was it?
No, apparently in mid-42 there were men drafted apart, you know, drafted away to the Middle East and so on. Can't remember any of your friends or?
No, I can't remember that, but obviously.
Mm-hmm. What about any kind of new equipment coming through to the Signal Platoon? You mentioned the number 18 cents.
Yeah, that had arrived. The latest thing we had, you know, it was all basic stuff, really, you know.
Yeah. The veterans have talked about throat microphones. Can you remember anything about them?
They did have them at Brigade, didn't they? Brigade headquarters. Because they had the big sets at Brigade, you know. Really big. Probably they can fetch anything in, actually, Brigade signals, Royal signals, you know. When it comes to infantry signals, the radio won't much good at all, not really. But it won't good enough, you know. A different thing today, wouldn't it?
Did you think that at the time, that it wasn't a very good piece of equipment, or did you?
Well, you knew, you know, it wasn't working. It was not working more times than it was, actually, what I can make out of it, you know, really.
Mm. What would tend to go wrong with it?
Well, that seemed to be the frequency, you know, sort of thinking that we could never get nothing. It'd be all right for a little while, and then it'd let you down, where it was atmospheric, or what, I don't know.
Would you carry, like, a set of spare parts, or a tool kit, or anything with a bit?
Not really, because most of the space the city couldn't carry anymore, really, the lads that we carry now. Mm. But the truck wasn't very far away. I mean, it was always near enough at BHQ, where a lot of the transport was at B Echelon. The signal store truck was always round battalion headquarters, really, you know. And, you know, if they wanted batteries or something, you know, to run it well.
Now, you know, the veterans have talked about, you know, things like the Bren gun that you were taught to, like, take this thing apart and put it back together again. Was there anything similar with the radios, with the field telephones? Was there anything that you
Well, that used to upset them, I suppose, you know, interfering freely, you know. But sometimes you couldn't hear the people properly and they couldn't understand you, you know. A lot of dependence voice where you was, but, yeah.
Would that be true of Morse as well as
someone's
voice?
No, the communication wasn't very clever at all, really. It was something modern, it was something, you know, I suppose it should have been a lot better than it was, but it takes time, I suppose. No more or less just trying about, really, weren't I? But there was a heavy thing to carry. When you get a squad, you got all his kit on and all his gear, and then you got to carry that as well. And, you know, it was difficult. Some of the singlers put up with a lot, really. They had a lot to do. You know, they've done it all, but they were sent somewhere they went, and that was it.
Now, you talked about the signals platoon, and you had like two signalers
with each company.
Would these men be like permanently with the same company all the time? Or would they
perhaps go to take up. See, if you was in, you might only be in the line for about 40 years or something, and then they would bring you out for a breather sort of thing, you know. And then the next time, perhaps two would have swapped companies, like, you know, something like that.
And as a dispatch rider, you would be with the
headquarters? Well, I was at Midfield all the time, yeah. Mm-hmm. And with the companies, we used to go there, and that was our job, really.
Now, as he moved towards going abroad, was there any other kind of equipment coming through that was strange that gave you an idea that maybe you were going abroad? Any?
Well, we got kitted out with a different material, didn't we? There was always something getting added to a kit to carry, but we weren't so bad with a bike because we've got two panniers in the back. And I think we had gas capes then, but they were handy. We didn't have mosquito nets till we got abroad, I think.
I should have asked you about gas training. You'd have did anti-gas training, I suppose, with the Beds and Hearts, would you? You'd have went through that.
Yeah, we've done a bit of that up there, but, you know. But we never had the gas capes till we went abroad. And they were the handiest thing we ever had. We used to, on the slip trains, you put them over the top like to keep the rain out and the wet, you know.
Now, you did all of these schemes in England. How did they compare, just in general terms, with when you know, apart from the danger of the front line, but when you were out on a scheme for a few days, how did that compare with being in the front line? I mean, had it prepared you for it, is what I'm trying to say.
Not really. We didn't expect, I didn't expect this, you know, what we were doing, because, you know, it was a different kettle if you sort of get that. Because apart from, you was afraid, because I don't know what anybody said, there were nearly everybody's got that fear attached to them, you know, because, you know, the stuff were flying down and flying about everywhere, you know. But after the session, then we seemed to get sorted out, and we knew what was happening, you know. But before then, it was just, I suppose, the first time in, and that was just chaos, like, you know. Mm-hmm. Well, I think it was, anyway.
Yeah, we'll talk about that later. But just focusing on these schemes, you'd go out on a scheme in 41-42. Would the authorities put emphasis on things like, you know, digging a deep slip trench, and
that's the first thing you've done everywhere, because you learned that the hard way, because the first thing you've done, dug a slip trench, two of you.
But would you do that in England in 41-42, or no. did it take action to get you to?
Well, no, we just bury our head if we could, like that. But when we was abroad, that was the first thing you done, that was necessity, that was born, you know.
But you didn't realise that until you got abroad?
Not really, no. You didn't, you know, because you was, you'd only have a narrow bit from, but I thought, so two you can get down, you know. And we, you know, that was a, we were like that for a long while at Sedgie, you know. And we used to cover the top of the gasket, kept it damp, you know, because it rained a lot up there. And we were like that for weeks and weeks and weeks, you know. So it was all, wherever you went, the first thing you'd done, and Thomason used to lay it down when it, you know, slipped down, you know. He's got your old half a spade sort of thing, and we used to get back in.
What do you think of that entrenching tool?
That was good. Well, you couldn't have done without it, really.
Did you ever carry, you know, proper pick and a shovel?
No, it was just an entrenching tool.
So
yeah.
You just used that?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right, so you were told that you were going to go abroad. How did that come about? What do you remember about?
Oh, just got her instructions and said, because when they moved with the transport, I nearly always went with the transport, and our job was to likely be, 100 vehicles, I suppose, in our battalion, getting on that way. And they used to leave the motorbikes, and you'd stop at a crossroads and see they get past, and you would stop there, and then you would come up at the front of the column again. And it was, I think, Captain Richardson used to be the transport officer, wasn't he? And we used to always follow him, like, and after we'd done our stint, when the dog passed us, we'd come flying up again. And, you know, and when we moved anywhere, but that's when we started, when we went to Liverpool. And then we'd done that an awful lot abroad, but I didn't mind doing that, because like when we moved from Tunis to back to Algiers, and that was, must be over 1,000 miles, and you know,
so when you went to Liverpool, the road transport, you went up by road.
The troops that followed later on. Mm.
Would you have to like navigate for the convoy then, or would that be somebody?
Oh no, the MT officer, which it was, I think Richardson was there for a long while, and he used to get all and led the way. We got on a jeep, like, you know.
So you would have like a four wheel vehicle.
Four wheel. You had a jeep. And we used to sit behind the jeep. And if they wanted us anything, to go back if somebody broke down and that sort of thing, you know.
Dear, were there any incidents on this trip up to Liverpool then? Anything that sticks in your mind?
Not really, no.
About how long could you ride a, you know, be on this motorbike before you were fatigue would set in? I mean, would you?
Oh, I don't know. We never thought about fatigue. It was always fatigue, but we kept going all the time. Right? But you see, I mean, day and night used to go sometimes. And they would stop and have perhaps a meal or something, you know, families, and you got your water bottle here anyway. Yeah.
So how long did it take you to get from
Liverpool? Well, I should think they were getting near 100 vehicles in the battalion, really. That was with the troop carriers as well, because some of the troops went with us, and a lot went up the train. And, you know, I'll take about 6 hours or something like that, perhaps more. But it's the oldest short Liverpool, you know. But mind you, the roads were not like the roads they got today. But you see, there was no signposts or nothing in the roads, like, and you got a tunnel, and that's why one of us would stand on the corner to where the, you know, convoy on it.
I should have asked you earlier, but during all these schemes, did you ever get lost on the bike?
No, it just scratched my head a lot, like, but, you know, you always got an idea somewhere trouble.
Now, and the other thing, I mean, did you ever have the chance, I mean, obviously you were, like, really a bit of a free agent, you know, you were an individual soldier on a motorbike. Was there ever the temptation just to pull off to the side of the road and, you know, go into the local pub or something and, you know, take a little bit longer to...
No, you didn't do that. No, well, mind you, it never entered my head, actually, to do that sort of thing, but, you know, you would have got real, in the wars, because they'd seen this year.
Now, you're on, I mean, all these various schemes. Did you ever kind of, on schemes in areas where you actually knew people, where you could just, where you might have been tempted just to take a turn and then call in on somebody?
Not really, no. We didn't have the money to start with. To do that sort of thing, really, you know. Never had it in my head anyway.
Now, apparently, before you went abroad, you had embarkation leave. Can you remember anything about that and what you did and where you went?
I must have come back here. Can't remember that.
Now, you knew you were going abroad. You didn't know where.
No, I hadn't got a clue where it was.
What were your general feelings about going on active service?
Well, I don't know. Just one of those things, you've got to do it and you've done it. So, something like that. You never queried anybody, you know, just went where you were sent, really.
What was the rumour mill saying in the battalion about where you were?
Oh, it was always going all over the world, sort of thing, really. It was the same when you was abroad, you know. It was always going on, but we never got there. There was always rumours flying about, but you didn't think about it, no. So. But when we were on the boat at Liverpool, one of the officers, I never forget, he was giving a talk about, that's when they got to know we was going to Algiers, I think it is. And I never forget. And he put all these bloody French letters and ED packets on a big table. And he says, if some silly fool tells you you can get a VD off a toilet, they're wrong. He says, if you got out of the hex, use them. And I never forget that. You shouldn't take that.